Gentlemen, greetings. Happy Tuesday. Welcome to the Steve Dace Show here live and on demand on Blaze TV radio and podcast alongside Todd Erzin and our very capable intern, Victoria, who continues to fill in for Aaron as he winds down his paternity leave. He'll be with us 6 days from today. We are here with you on Blaze TV, and we are brought to you by our friends over at First Cup Coffee Company. They have a flavor for every freedom-loving American, and don't get them because they're patriots like you. Get them because they make great coffee, and they're patriots like you. The roast date is right there in every bag, so you know it was shipped to you within days of being roasted. Get 10% off when you use my promo code DACE at firstcup.com. Promo code DACE at firstcup.com. And if you subscribe, you get an additional 10% off for the life of the subscription at firstcup.com. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, John Zemarek from The Stream will join us, and we will kvetch about what has been happening in Congress for the last few days. Next hour, for idolatry or not. Last week, Bill Maher said on his program, the quiet part out loud. Well, of course, these are people. I'm just fine killing them. We have too many people as it is. So last week it was, I'm fine if you want to kill the babies. This week he puts out, how dare you rape and groom the babies. That needs to stop. And I want us to, Todd, discuss. Number one, is that a gimmick? Is that, you know, hey, I went too far last week, you know, and so let me dial it back a little bit, because that happens in broadcasting at times, right? Okay. Or is it, can the same mind legitimately have the exact same moral reactions to largely the same, that are in diametric opposition to one another, but largely to the same stimuli? I mean, it's the exact same people. It's the exact same ideologies and worldviews that are saying kill the babies and then rape and groom them if you don't kill them. I mean, it's the same people. So how do you look at the exact same people advocating two of those things and have opposite reactions? And the reason why I want us to have particularly part two of the conversation, because it might go a long way in helping us to understand the current zeitgeist and spirit of the age. Okay. Meaning, is it as simple as some issues are sunk costs and built in to the zeitgeist and are harder because they're grandfathered in and they're more deeply embedded, like killing babies, for example, but this one is still a fresh wound. And so maybe there is ground to till here. That's the conversation I want to have next hour. And then at the bottom of next hour, a topic that a lot of you have asked me to weigh in on that up to now, I have not. And that is what happened at the men's conference 2 weeks ago with Mark Driscoll and the sword swallower and everything else. I'm going to weigh into it now that there's more information out there. And I'll tell you why I haven't up until this point. All right. So I'll do that. It's not. Yeah, I think I'm going to call it Pop Culture Tuesday. I mean, after all, the gentleman in question is, you can call him a stripper, a go-go dancer. He's a performer. Okay. And so now we're bringing things from the popular culture into the church and calling it ministry. So I think it qualifies, right? And that's kind of what the debate is about, right?
Yeah. Pop culture these days goes far and wide. So yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, there once was a time that we inspired the painters and the composers, and they painted great things and wrote great music in response to what our worldview inspired. Now we bring them in to the church out the other way around and tell them, you inspire us now.
Yes.
Yeah. How's that working, by the way? We've been doing that for about a generation.
Poorly.
That's not gone well. Yeah. So I'm sure we'll get into that too. That's coming up a little bit later on in the program. Before we do that, though, there are two points I would like to address here in the opening to the show. One involves Ukraine. And no one that I have seen, and I mean, I've watched the Ben Shapiro clips. I've read the Ari Fleischer tweets. I mean, I know this is kind of a new thing and kind of edgy in the era we are in, but I'm this kind of throwback dude where I'm not like immediately threatened by someone who has a different opinion than me. And I do think at times, now I will admit, I love me some me, so the bar is high. Okay. But I do think there are times people might know something more about something than I do, and they might change my mind. You've been here for almost 10 years. I don't change my mind a lot. I mean, if I vacillated all the time, then why in the world would I be in the opinion business at all if I gave opinions on things I really didn't feel strongly about, right? Yeah. But you have seen me change my opinion on some things or tactics or ideas over the years, for sure.
Absolutely.
And it's in response to facts on the ground. And, well, we have more knowledge of reality. For example, the idea that we would discuss vaccination on this show prior to 2019... there were a couple times I did some interviews with people because I thought their claim should at least be heard about whether their vaccines caused them autism or something. But the idea that this would be like a deep dive, consistent issue on this program just simply wasn't even on the palette when you joined here, right?
Right. Even though I'm me.
Correct.
Yeah.
And yet it is the last few years, it has been one of the most discussed topics on this show. Why?
Yes.
Because there's new data, there's new facts now, and that requires a new understanding of the reality that's around us that maybe we weren't available to beforehand. Fair?
Sure.
Okay. So I have tried to see what the pro-Ukraine crowd thinks. I have tried. And honestly, their arguments are extremely weak. They're very emotional. And nostalgia is a form of emotion. Tradition is a balance of faith and reason. Nostalgia is just emotion. Nostalgia is an emotional response to things you were enjoyed or were inspired by in another time and era that's gone. And you greatly desire to bring them back, even though the world has moved on. And I always use the analogy of when Peter's like, wow, here's Christ on the mountain with Elijah and Moses. And if you're a Jewish kid, man, that's the Trinity in the first century. That's your Trinity right there. The greatest prophet, the greatest superhero, Elijah. Okay. And here's Messiah. Okay. And he's like, let's just stay right here. It doesn't get any better than this. Let's just hang out like forever and just gaze. Okay. Okay. No, you have a mission. And those things are meant to inspire you to that mission. They are not meant to cause you to be stale and to stay where you're at. And the arguments that I see for Ukraine, I'll be honest with you, I've not seen one good one. Not one. I've not seen one good one from people on our own network who are in favor of this. I've not seen one from people on other networks that are in favor of this. I haven't seen one. And that doesn't mean, by the way, that I think the people making the other argument are stupid, because they're very smart. But here's what I mean when I say their argument, I don't think, has any merit. Like, none. It's because they're largely arguing from a flawed premise. Yeah, I'm not entirely sure why so many on the left demand that we care more about Ukraine than ourselves. I mean, you and I, Todd, are old enough to remember when the people on the left were reflexively against any military investment or action by the United States, even if it seemed as if there was a direct military threat or rationale. You and I are old enough to remember Ted Kennedy and the like fetting Daniel Ortega and the Sandinistas in Nicaragua. Okay.
Yes.
Communists who are literally within driving distance of the Rio Grande. Okay. That was just beyond the pale that we would seek to, you know, fund the Contras and not want communism within, you know, a few days walk for, you know, across our open border. That was American imperial militarism under the Reagan era. Right.
Okay. Yes.
And so, but now they just can't wait to fund this playground of Ukraine. I'm not really sure. Their arguments seem largely to be, well, that's just our party's agenda, so I'm going for it. Or the party has that agenda because it's their own personal playground there. You know, this is like a mysterious land. What is it about this particular land that it is just so vital, okay, to risk everything over, right?
The reverse Wakanda.
It is. That's a great analogy.
What's the metal? That makes them so famous? That makes the
The shield,
Vibranium.
Is what Wolverine has.
We
got to
find out what the vibranium is there. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Thank you, Victoria, for that.
Look at her. She just went top rope on superheroes.
She did. She just beat me to an MCU question. So well done. Your parents raised you right. Anyway, on our side, the arguments all begin from the premise of either A, Vladimir Putin seeks to rebuild the Soviet Union. Well, why not say that Vladimir Putin seeks to rebuild the Romanov dynasty? Why not just say Vladimir Putin seeks to rebuild the empire of Peter the Great, Catherine the Great? I'll tell you why, okay? It's because the people saying that weren't alive then. If they were alive then, they'd say that. See, that's what nostalgia does. See what I'm saying? That's what nostalgia does. So a reflexive reaction... Since I was seared, forged, raised, brought up in a world, came to age in a world where Russia was the enemy in the form of the Soviet Union, I just see everything through that nostalgic lens. Despite whatever evidence could be brought to the contrary, I simply just won't acknowledge it. Now, at any point during this exercise, Todd, have I said I think Vladimir Putin's a swell dude?
No.
A righteous dude. He's Ferris Bueller. He's a righteous dude. Have I said that?
No, you have not looked into his eyes like George W. Bush.
Correct.
And seen his soul.
Yes. I'm no fan of Vladimir Putin at all, but I also know it's not 1987. I know that. You know, I lived in 1987. That was a long time ago. I just started shaving in 1987, and now I'm sick of shaving. Because it's 2024, okay, and I'm 51, and Reagan's dead, and it's a far different world. We knew what men and women were, and I'll get to that in a second, too, okay? I mean, it's a much different world than it was in 1987. Tipper Gore wanted to put the parental warning stickers on the albums in 1987. That's how long ago that was, okay? So it's not 1987, but if that's my frame of reference. See, on the left, everything goes back to Watergate and Woodstock because the boomer left is forged by those two events. On the right, everything goes back to Reagan and the Cold War because the boomer right was forged in those events, those two nexuses. And so everything reverberates back to those things. But all good things, Jean-Luc, must come to an end. However, if you are looking for Soviet Union esque resurrections, I could point you to a few. Would you like me to give you some examples? You don't have to look very far. Let's just look here to the West. Woke up this morning. Here are the first three headlines in my feed this morning. Number one, Germany passing a law that says parents can mutilate their kids, trans their kids, basically any moment post-birth. Just castrate their kids any moment post-birth. Just straight up Island of Dr. Moreau, Romans 1 is real, these are forsaken lands levels of evil. That's Germany. They're in NATO. Number two, our country. California, literally, Gavin Newsom came out yesterday with a commercial, women getting arrested for murdering their children. Yet we used to arrest people for murder. Now the people that do the murder are the victims, but okay. It's a strange time that we live in. Very Soviet, in fact. And now he's also urging people in Arizona that want to kill their children to come to California and live there so they can. We're now recruiting people to relocate on the basis of child sacrifice. That's Romans 1 levels of depravity, forsaken land kind of stuff. Right here at home.
Yes.
Right here in our own hemisphere. And I know Australia is in another hemisphere, and it's actually springtime for Hitler down there right now, literally. Fall time for Hitler. It's springtime here. But, it's a colony. It was a colony founded by the British. Its parallels and heritage go back to the West, so they're traditionally associated with the West, right?
Yes.
They basically want to... They are trying to claim that they get to censor the entire world. That's what they're claiming right now, that they get to determine what Twitter will post and is permitted to post for all of the planet, the Australian government. That's their case. So we'll decide who lives or dies. We'll decide what you do and don't get to see. And then we'll decide what is and what isn't reality. Okay. Those three things all sound very what to you, Todd?
Orwellian?
Very Soviet to me. Very Soviet to me. And they're right here in the West. So explain to me why I care. And why I should care. And I don't care what percentage. The idea of making the argument on the basis of, well, we're only robbing you for Ukraine. It's only a very small percentage of the budget. Hey, listen, you know, we broke into your home and we broke your wife's nose. That's only a small percentage of her anatomy. Why should you care? Someone who I think is really smart in this movement made that argument, and it blew my mind because I know he's smarter than that, and it's exceedingly dumb. Why doesn't he take 2% of his wealth then and just light it on fire on his show today? I mean, it's just only 2% of his wealth. Just light it on fire. Why does he care? Just light it on fire and let's just watch it burn. He's got plenty. First of all, the government doesn't have any money. Ben Shapiro should know governments don't have money. So it's not 2% of the money. They don't have any money and we're broke. The government doesn't have any money and we're broke. So there's no 2% of something when you have nothing. When you have nothing, do you have 2% of something?
No.
No. When you have no ability, when you have no money ever, no matter whether you're running a balanced budget or not, do you ever have 2% of something when you have no money ever?
No.
No. You and I are also old enough to remember when Ben Shapiro made arguments like governments don't have any money. You and I are old enough to remember those arguments.
Correct.
Too. Don't guess we don't make those arguments anymore. There is no case for Ukraine that doesn't begin on the right, that doesn't begin your premise with some fever dream analysis of the guy who could not put on an Olympics without paper macheing toilets and the guy who's been unable to subdue Ukraine for the last 3 years is the next Khrushchev beating his shoe on the podium at the UN. I'll show you some wannabe Khrushchevs. And by the way, I kind of think Putin probably is one. But I've got a few wannabe Khrushchevs banging the podium right here on every college campus in America, pretty much.
Indeed.
Yeah. Every local, every corporate media conglomerate banging their shoe on the podium saying, we will bury you, right?
Yes.
Almost every public medical health orifice in the country banging its shoe on the podium saying, we will bury you, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm seeing lots of hammer and sickles, actually. They're dressed up in Union Jacks and stars and bars. No, we got our own problems, dude. So that's going to be a no from me, dog. Come back to me when you have a good argument. I've yet to hear one. Any thoughts on that before I move on to another point?
No, I think it's pretty buttoned up. But again, it's chilling not only that they're bad arguments, but bad arguments for a bizarro world hole in the ground called it's over Ukraine. I mean, there are places with real bad things that have gone on. You know, Rwanda, whatever have happened. Where these aren't even... This is over Ukraine. We have no idea what this is about. It doesn't mean the people there don't matter or anything like this. But it's just a giant question. Their flag should be a giant question mark. What is this about?
All right, before we get to the second thing I want to address, a word from our friends over at Birch Gold. There is a common sense reason that gold is pushing to all-time highs as we speak. Actually, there's several reasons. The cost of goods continues to rise despite interest rate controls by the Fed. The cost of living has gone up 18% since 2021. The national debt has skyrocketed to $34 trillion. We've got a presidential election with massive implications for the future of this country. Although if you watch the behavior of both the candidates most days, it wouldn't seem that's the case. Anyway, this all adds up to instability and uncertainty, and that's why so many Americans are turning to Birch Gold Group. Have you diversified your savings yet? Secure a portion of them with gold from Birch Gold. If you want to get started, get a free info kit from our friends at Birch Gold with an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau, tens of thousands of happy customers. Text Steve to 989-898 for that free info kit. Get started today. You can also learn how to convert an existing IRA or 401k into a tax-sheltered IRA in gold with no cost out of pocket to you. Text Steve to 989-898. That's text Steve to 989-898. All right, I'm going to owe another $10 to the poll jar for this other thing that I wanted to bring up. But today is exactly 18 weeks until the presidential election. It is 18 weeks from today. We're going to discuss, we're running a poll that just concluded on our Twitter feed right now, asking you what one word best describes what you're thinking about this election. Are you disinterested? Are you excited? Are you worried? And we're going to share those results and discuss them in the overtime later today. But I think we are in trouble in a state that I did not previously think we were going to be in trouble in. And I'm not entirely sure why, which is why I'm bringing it up. Because I'm thinking there's going to be some smart people in this audience that might be able to help me understand it. I don't know a lot about North Carolina on a personal level. Have some friends there. Did some campaigning there in 2022. And if you remember, Todd, when I came back from doing some campaign stops across the state, that was May of 2022. So almost exactly 2 years ago. And when I came back, I think I said on the show and to you guys privately, everywhere I went, people raved about Mark Robinson, the lieutenant governor.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there was another poll that came out yesterday from Meredith College. And a lot of times the local media polls of a state are better than the national media polls are. Now, I did go and look. Meredith College had, in its final poll of 2020, had Biden winning North Carolina by 4. And Trump actually won it by 1.3 points. All right, so that's a swing and a miss there, okay? But it wasn't just that poll when I looked at it yesterday, because I was stunned that it had Mark Robinson losing by 9 points in the North Carolina governor's race. Blew my mind. Just sitting up here from 10,000 feet away, just what I saw on the ground going to Florida, or I'm sorry, to North Carolina. So I went and looked at pretty much all the polling that's been done of North Carolina thus far. And it's the same trend line for Mark Robinson. He is not doing well. So this particular poll aside, the trend line right now is not good. And this could have major reverberations on a national level. I think we had in 2016, we had a presidential election where everything was determined in the five decisive states by a grand total of less than 78,000 votes. In 2020, we had the exact same thing, and it was even fewer votes. I think it was less than 40,000 votes. All right, so we're talking about extremely thin margins here. I came out 2 weeks ago with my first forecast for the election, and you'll recall I basically had one state being the difference to which party got to 270 and which did not. In my analysis. So I think that we need to have some concern on a national level here on the right about the North Carolina governor's race. Because if we're talking about Mark Robinson at this stage being that level of a drain on the ticket, and I don't know why. I would be eager to know why. Because, again, just going around during the primary season, man, I mean, his name was gold. Everywhere I went, that's all. Hey, have you met Mark Robinson yet? And I've not. But, you got to meet this guy. He's incredible. We played some clips of him on our show. I think he's one of the keynote speakers for Jason Whitlock's roll call event in Nashville in June. So something's not resonating with the broader electorate of North Carolina. And since I don't live there and I don't know him or the players, I don't know what the answer is. Here's what I do know, though, is North Carolina is a strange state in that it both has among the highest suburban and rural populations in the entire country. Because you have this massive rural area, but then you have this research triangle there as well. Trump actually won the suburbs in North Carolina by 21 points in 2020. That was by far his best performance in the suburbs in a swing state. Yet despite that, guys, he only won the state by 1.3 points. So the margin for error here, if you're telling me that they could win North Carolina, that just makes our path to 270 much more difficult. It's already not easy. Now we're making it much. You're basically now in a position where I think we can win Michigan to we have to win Michigan, and I'm sure Gretchen Whitmer and the election fortifiers in Michigan are going to be happy to let us win that one. Todd, your thoughts?
Right.
Yeah, I'm sure they I'm sure they will. Raise your hand if you're like, hey, I would like to know whether our colleague Steve Baker will go to prison or not, and whether my daughter and her husband will be able to buy a house in the next 4 years or not. Raise your hand if the answers to those questions free, and I'm going to have a job, right? My son's going to get drafted in some useless, needless war. Raise your hand if you're like, however, I feel really confident that those things may come down to Gretchen Whitmer's playground. Looking far and near, to and fro, I see no hands. That's what would happen if North Carolina is an L. So, in fact, I could foresee a scenario where, if this continues into the summer, Democrats will make Mark Robinson Trump's running mate. They'll put him together as a ticket. It won't matter who Trump picks. Hey, Trump can pick Kamala Harris for his running mate. In North Carolina, you could think it's Mark Robinson. And then you put Trump in a position where do I have to deviate from my own gubernatorial nominee and crap in my own bed? Okay, so whatever's going on there and whatever Mark Robinson's issues are, this needs to get ironed out. And I'm saying it today on April 23rd, okay? Because if they're not, it's very likely many of us in this audience are going to be extremely concerned, worried, disappointed on November 6th. Because this state can't be a loss. Well, Steve, I thought they just had filibuster proof majorities in the legislature. Well, that's a district basis, and so when you have a large rural population and you're winning things based on districts, you can do very well statewide by winning all those districts. Right here, we're just talking about a straight up statewide vote, no districts. One man, one vote. Whoever's got the most votes, popular vote, wins the state. And the trend line for Mark Robinson right now is bad. So if you know Mark, I need to get their stuff in gear. Because if we know how Trump will react, if we've got polls of Biden like winning in North Carolina in September, October, and Mark Robinson's down by 7 to 10 points, you and I, we both know how Trump's going to react to that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Trump is going to introduce Mark Robinson to the broadside of the bottom of a bus, right? And then that'll just put people to, we'll be right back to where we were on the abortion conversation 2 weeks ago, pitting people against each other mere weeks before we're actually going to vote now. Okay. So this needs to get dealt with today, preferably, because I could see Democrats making Mark Robinson a very famous figure, even more so in North Carolina than he is, if this trend line were to continue. I don't know what's going on. From what I've seen of the guy, I find him impressive, but I've never met him. Clearly, there's something happening there where he's not resonating with people because the trend line's bad. And that could impact us nationally, Todd. I'm sorry.
I think the irony is probably because he's viewed as too Trumpian. I think the thumbs are put on the scale on two sides. The establishment, who just... You look, and Carrie Lake, the Carrie Lake of the initial election, too Trumpian, can't be counted on to play ball. And then the normie that we talked about yesterday in the overtime, Steve, the one that is just made to be feel uncomfortable about their view of the world by somebody who goes out and gets it. I like the flat earth. I'll just write my check. You make me feel like I'm supposed to be trying harder. I don't want to. I think there's resentment from the establishment and the normie voter for, again, there may very well be specifics. And obviously we found things out about Carrie Lake we don't like. But there's just a personality.
We found
thing.
Them out now.
Yes.
We didn't know them
in
2022.
That's my point. And about Trump, there's just like, you won't play ball. You won't just keep the trains running on time. You're not allowed to have that much personality because that makes me look like the stiff I actually am. I think that's as likely as anything else. You're only allowed to go so far. We're not really looking for people that inspire us anymore. We're looking for people that don't make us feel uncomfortable, and we hate to feel uncomfortable.
Well, just to give you an idea of the trend line, I just looked again. There have been 9 polls of the North Carolina governor's race since the primary, and Robinson's behind in 8 of them. And in 3 of the last 4, the margin has been 7, 8, and 9. So, need to figure something out there. More in a moment. Well, just like it was back during the scamdemic, today we are facing drug and medical supply shortages here in the U.S. As of March, there were more than 200 drug shortages right here, and it's looking like it could get a lot worse before it gets better. That's why you want to check out our friends over at Jace Medical. You get the Jace case, easy for me to say. You can get the Jace case. It provides 5 life-saving antibiotics for emergency use. All you have to do is fill out a simple form online. You'll have it there, ready in case you need it. Ready in case these are the next drugs that suddenly, right when we might need them the most, we're told they're horse-paced, they don't work, they're dangerous, after giving them Nobel Prizes and the such. There are also dozens of add-on options as well, like EpiPens and, yes, ivermectin, that you can add to your Jace Medical case to make sure you get what your family needs. I would really recommend this if you've got a loved one right now that relies a lot on Medicare or Medicaid, and therefore, essentially, their government is their entire healthcare system. The ability to make sure they've got backups and the most peace of mind that you and they could have, I'd highly recommend this, all right? So check this out today at jasemedical.com, J-A-S-E, jasemedical.com. Enter the code DACE at checkout. You'll get a discount on your order if you do. jasemedical.com, and the promo code is DACE for a discount at jasemedical.com. Saw this headline yesterday, and we had an opening on the show today, and I said, all right, we need to discuss. Here's the headline over at the stream. Ukraine First Speaker Johnson forgets American freedom and uselessly risks a world war. Let's bring on the author of that provocative headline, John Zamarek. Good to see you, John. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks, Steve. And I quoted your wonderful commentary at The Blaze about the failure of the Christian community in politics just across the board. You talk mostly about evangelicals. I can speak to the failure of my fellow Catholics to actually be good citizens, patriotic Christians. The term Christian nationalist is just a dog whistle invented by like Southern Poverty Law Center people to scare old people in Florida into writing them checks. It's designed to sound like white nationalists, just right. Like election denier is designed to sound like Holocaust denier. So I say don't call yourself, don't buy into the whole trick of Christian nationalism. Say, I'm a patriotic Christian. Are you a pagan globalist? Let's talk about you.
I like that. I want to talk about what you think, John, because one thing I know about you, you are a student of history, right? I mean, you know, my version of the saying is history doesn't just repeat, it also rhymes. I think both occur. I think the devil has a greatest hits album, and he just plays the hits generation after generation.
History rhymes, and it's a dispiriting, dirty limerick.
And so you can see almost a rhythm to things at times. Like yesterday, I was looking at headlines yesterday. I'm like, all right, let's see. An ineffective, corrupt government run by geriatrics, incapable of meeting the people's needs. Check. Therefore, growing cynicism about government overall and the culture overall. Check. We have the church abrogating its prophetic witness in the public square, no longer willing and therefore able to speak out systemically against evil. Check. And now we've got blame the Jews everywhere we go. Check. I've seen this game. I've seen this movie before, John. I've read this book. I read this about this in history class before. And then the final step is a country that started the century the most enlightened and prosperous in the history of Western civilization and ends it as the chief exporter of evil. Check, 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 check. I've seen this movie before. But I'm mystified, and Todd and I were just talking about it again. We are mystified about Ukraine. Todd refers to it as the reverse Wakanda, okay? What is it about this country that everyone is dropping their trousers, making the worst arguments, just naked levels of let them eat cake, betrayals of their constituency and bases, the amount of political capital being expended for Ukraine, it is mystifying. When you look at this, to me, I just see a Habsburg dynasty pissing contest between the Putin wing and the Soros WEF wing, and I don't care who wins. All right, but what is it that our elites, regardless of party, are just anxious to show us how feckless they are over this one plot of land?
Well, the left has figured out our PIN code, the PIN code of the right, and that is the Cold War. Because the opponent here is Russia, And we, many of us, spent our lives seeing the Soviet Union rightly as the enemy of everything decent in the world. The fact that it's still the same place and they still speak the same language, and some of the people like Putin used to work for the old government, they know our PIN code. They know they can whip us up into a mindless jingoistic frenzy, and we can dump trillions of dollars. They know that people like Nikki Haley can become a millionaire overnight, as she did by going to work for Boeing. And all of a sudden, she was the biggest cheerleader for war against Russia. I want to point out to people a few basic things. Ukraine was part of Russia for longer than Texas has been part of the United States. Vladimir Putin has said that if we make Ukraine part of NATO, it will result in World War III. Us making Ukraine part of NATO, or treating it de facto as part of NATO, which the Biden regime is doing, is every bit as provocative as the Soviets putting nuclear missiles in Cuba. John F. Kennedy was willing to start a World War III with nuclear weapons to stop Soviet missiles in Cuba. Vladimir Putin, I believe him, would start World War III to stop the nuclear alliance of NATO from taking over Ukraine. So we are dancing on the edge of World War III. The neocons and the people who are just trying to get rich off the war, they are constantly saying, it's always October 1938 and Munich, and everyone who opposes them is Neville Chamberlain. They said that about Saddam Hussein. They said that about Manuel Noriega in Panama. Every time they want a war, anyone who opposes it is Neville Chamberlain, because it's always Munich. We're trapped forever in 1938. I want to suggest to you, maybe it's a different historical moment. We might be in August 1914 in Sarajevo. We are corrupt, cowardly, self-serving politicians are willing to throw their country into a war that could end civilization in order to feather their own nests and cover their own butts. And that is Mike Johnson. Mike Johnson is just an amazing example of American mediocrity. It's like they took Ned Flanders from The Simpsons and they hated him enough to make him a real boy like Pinocchio, and they made him Speaker of the House. I was on Eric Metaxas this morning and we were talking about, why are all these public Christians, regime Christians, like Mike Pence and Mike Johnson, why are they so disappointing when they actually take power? And I said, they're Christians in the same sense Dylan Mulvaney is a woman. They've got the pearls, they've got the dress, they've got the hair. They just don't have any of the really functional parts that actually matter, like the kind that can create new life. These people, for them, Christianity is background music. It's like, instead of going to church, you put Gregorian chant on Pandora, and that's enough for you. If you're not willing to stand up against institutions like defense contractors, like the woke Defense Department, like the media, if you're not willing to occasionally get your nose bloody by saying you can't force this untested vaccine made from dead babies on everyone in America, if you're not willing to do that, you are utterly useless. You're like the Sadducees. The Sadducees and King Herod, who are cooperating with pagan Caesar and controlling God's people on Caesar's behalf. That's what these people are. They're not even Pharisees, because some of the Pharisees were sincere. Some of the Pharisees converted. Jesus actually preached to the Pharisees. He didn't even preach to the Sadducees. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't even speak to King Herod. These people are not even Pharisees. Being a Pharisee would be a huge improvement for these people.
All right, final thing I want to ask you about. What is, and it's a two-part question, John. What's the way out here? Because I agree with you. I mean, this is Guns of August kind of stuff. I mean, when you talk about the summer of 1914, that's right in my Habsburg dynasty analogy wheelhouse. We're talking about the same period of history, same kinds of people. Just they're all interrelated. They're all doing business. Russia is still one of the top energy outfitters to all these same European countries that are trying to start World War III with it at the exact same time. It's all incestuous. All right, so what's the way out here? And then I want to ask you about this. What is Trump's role here? Because he gets a lot of credit as president for keeping us out of needless wars. However, this time as a candidate, I mean, there's a reason why Mike Johnson went down to Mar-a-Lago a week and a half ago to essentially get a papal blessing from Trump before he then went in there and sold us out on FISA and virtually everything else, right? And so what is, I mean, Mike Johnson needs to be responsible for the role he plays. He's in the policy-making position, okay? But there is a role here as the de facto figurehead leader of the party that Trump plays too. And I think right now we need a little bit more of the name-calling of all these figures, Trump, that we saw in 2016, and a little less of, well, these, I'm a tribal chieftain trying to keep all my various factions and denominations at bay and working together facilitator that we're seeing now, where now we go from FISA is causing a coup attempt against me to vote how you want on FISA, I don't even care. So there, he plays some role here too, John. What is it? Can you answer those two questions?
Sure. The way out is a quick Russian victory, and I'm praying for a quick Russian victory over Ukraine. I hope they beat them now, before World War III starts. I yes, it's sad. It's sad that Ukraine will be subjugated, but I would rather see Russian troops from the Orkneys to Malta, from Kiev to Gibraltar, occupying all of Europe, than have FBI infiltrating our churches, the FBI listening to us without warrants, the churches being infiltrated by FBI agents, and kids losing custody, parents losing custody of their kids to transgender grooming school psychologists. Everything that's happening in America right now is as bad as Vladimir Putin could do to us if he occupied the United States. Joe Biden is Putin, except he's over here. The FBI is the FSB, except they're over here. We have already been conquered by a totalitarian state that hates Christians. It's already in control. And by telling us to talk about Putin and Russia, it's just like the magician waving a shiny scarf so you don't see that he's pulling the rabbit out of something. It is 100% just diversion. So I am praying for a quick Russian victory, as bloodless as possible, with as few civilians killed as possible, in order to avoid World War III. I don't think it's worthwhile to see one American city nuked, not to save all of Europe, much less Ukraine. And we need to be clear about that, that we don't care. I don't care about the independence of Ukraine. I care about FBI agents in our churches. Call me crazy, but I care more about what's happening to my neighbors than what's happening to strangers 4,000 miles away. And yes, Trump deserves a lot of criticism and a lot of blame, which he won't get because we're desperate to win this election. He deserves a lot of criticism. I think theologically, Trump is what we actually deserve. He's a Samson, a flawed Samson. That's as much as we deserve as a country. We were offered Pat Buchanan 20 years ago, and we said no. Pat Buchanan doesn't have these character flaws. He has all Trump's good stuff with none of his bad stuff. And America said, no, no, no. God said, fine. You don't want Pat Buchanan, I'll give you Donald Trump, the Samson you deserve. So in a sense, the fact that Donald Trump is the best we have is kind of a divine judgment on us. Hmm.
Great stuff. You can read John's piece over at stream.org, stream.org. And John writes a lot of great stuff, so make sure you check him out. Agree or disagree, it is always really smart. Thank you, John. Good to see you, man.
Thank you. You too.
All right. And thanks to the audience. We know we had a little bit of an audio issue there with John. So thank you guys for persevering through that. But I knew what he was going to have to say was going to be important enough to consider that I weighed that it was worth letting him say it than concern about the little hum there in the background of his hookup. Todd, what do you think?
Well, if I'm not your Catholic brother from another mother, it's that guy. I mean, goodness.
He even used the Trump Samson analogy that I've used many, many times. But yes.
I know. Yeah. The term that he uses, which is so obvious, but I haven't heard it before, and I don't think we've ever used it, but it certainly applies to what we talk about. I got to chill up my side. When he talks about regime Christians, man, does that nail it? Absolutely nail it. People double-minded in all their ways.
Meaning that they're not Judases. Okay.
Yes.
And but they're not Nehemiahs. He basically just they're Jar Jar Binkses. Well, I think we should vote the Chancellor Emergency Power. They're useful idiots. Yes. Is essentially what he is saying.
Yes.
Yeah. Useful idiots.
And very much. How is that possible? Well, earlier in the show, you talked about nostalgia. It has a lot to do with that. And John lays into that about how the cheat, he didn't call it the cheat code. What did the pin code?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, let's go into, play the Rocky, you know, theme. Mm-hmm. And there's Ivan Drago. Let's go get him. You know, we're that stuff. We're that soft. We're that stupid. We're that weak. We really just want to hum a tune.
You know, I talked many years ago that when I first started my political activism here in Iowa, I came across a figure that was the least trustworthy person I've ever met to this very day. Still the least, well, I've not met Mike Johnson, so I can't include him, but the least trustworthy person I have actually met, I met here in Iowa, in Christian conservative, and he was a prominent person in Christian conservative circles. Now, I didn't say he was the... You've heard me talk about this person before. You know who I'm talking about. The audience doesn't know, nor would they care, so there's no point in naming the person. But you've not heard me say he's the most corrupt person I've met. Is that what I said?
I don't think so.
No, I said he's the most untrustworthy. Corrupt would be a standard. Like, corrupt would be, oh, okay. I just got to cut this guy a bigger check, or I just got to give him a bigger platform, or I just, you know, got to get him a better speaker. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Corrupt means I'm on the take. Corrupt, I can deal with. I can deal with corrupt. I can guess what you're going to do because I can just guess because I know what you're all about. You know, and then I know that if I can grease that palm with more than the next person, I'm going to get what I want. That's at least a standard that I can game plan into my analysis or my own strategy, right? No, untrustworthy is something I can't game plan. Meaning that this person's personal convictions were so weak that, I mean, I watched them just change their positions based on who they were talking to 6-7 times in a given moment. He could not be counted on any, and to this day he can't be. He just can't be counted on. You don't know where he is. He's not corrupt. He's just that level of weak. And that's who I think Mike Johnson is. That's who Mike Pence is. When John talks about regime, calls them regime Christians, that's what I mean. Useful idiots. That level of untrustworthy. That weak. That such jellyfish that instead of I'm corrupt looking for my own ambitions, it's what will grant me the least resistance and the most affirmation. And in many respects, that's exactly how the church, particularly the evangelical church, I'll let you speak to your tribe. You deal with them on a weekly basis. I don't. But in the evangelical church, much of it is based on what will please the most people and draw the most crowd, not what is the most prophetic and is the most truthful. And Mike Johnson and Mike Pence are just absolute constructs and caricatures of that. Idolatry or not is next. Back here with Hour 2, live and on demand on Blaze TV, radio, and podcast. Steve Dace here with Todd Erzin, Aaron McIntyre, and all of you, and our outstanding intern, Victoria, who is doing such a great job that I just immediately assumed that was Aaron over there. That's about the best compliment I could give.
Yeah, I agree.
It's been so seamless. And you haven't obnoxiously interrupted us by tapping on your 100% biblical worldview sign right in the middle of a very important point.
I think she's deserved to, on her last day, take that off the wall and walk out as a keepsake. I think she's earned it.
Yeah, I like that. Let us know what you think about what we think via the SteveDace.com inbox. You can do so by emailing us, steve@stevedace.com, DEACE. Like us on Facebook, MeWe, and Gab. You can follow me at Steve Dace Show on Twitter, Gitter, Instagram, and TikTok. And then if you are a podcast aficionado, please thank you very much. Leave us a 5-star review if you like the show. Thanks to all of you who have. You can also hit subscribe, or if you're on iTunes, you hit follow nowadays, and that way every time we do a new show, it will show up in your podcast feed each and every single time. And this part of the podcast, or the Blaze TV show, depending on which iteration you're watching or viewing, is brought to you by our friends at Eden Pure. They are back with their famous Thunderstorm air purifier. It's their top-selling air purifier that quickly destroys the components that are causing that bad air in your home, whether that is mold, mildew, bacteria, even some viruses. That's why it's got thousands of 5-star reviews. It is not an air freshener. It's an air purifier. And it's also filterless, so you'll never be replacing filters out of pocket or out of expense or time forever. All right, so if you want to get the three-pack for whole home protection, you can save $200 and get all three units for under $200. And you can do that if you go to EdenPureDeals.com and use the discount code STEVE3. That's discount code STEVE3 at Eden Pure Deal. You know, Eden, the place we got kicked out of. EdenPureDeals.com, discount code STEVE3. All right, coming up at the bottom of the hour, I've gotten a ton of emails and responses asking me to comment on it. I try to do this silly thing where if I'm not sure about what information I'm being given on this, I try not to comment on it. I know that's weird. You know, you might recall when we were at Salem and we had school shootings, they'd get mad at us if we didn't like immediately do the show on the school shooting. And I don't blame them for that. It's the biggest story in the country. But I'm like, they're still pulling bodies out of there, man. I don't know what happened. I don't know what's going on. And why be in a hurry to be wrong? Right.
Yes.
All right. And then if I think I have a personal bias, and in this case I do, you know, then I really want to make sure we honor when the proverb says one man's story seems true till you hear the other side. All right. So the story of what went on at this this massive men's ministry event and Mark Driscoll rebuking them for what they did there. A lot of you have asked me for commentary on it. I have restrained, withheld commentary. I've said a couple of very generic things on social media, but I've said not very much. And I'm going to explain why. And then I'll tell you what I think went on there coming up at the bottom of the hour. Okay. But first, let's get to idolatry or not. So I want to set the stage for what you're about to see, because we are going to play, since they put it out publicly, we are going to play the entire 8-minute clip of Bill Maher's closing commentary to his show on HBO last weekend. And I think you need to see this in its entirety, or hear it in its entirety if you have not. It could very well be, overall, it's certainly not necessarily the way I would word things from the worldview that I am coming from, but in terms of just a bottom line takedown of the grooming we are doing in America, it might be the best I've ever seen. But this comes from the same show, the same voice, and the same writers who a week ago we were on our show talking about Bill Maher saying, well, let's just be honest, we're killing kids. It is murder. We all know it is. And I mean, I think I'm okay with it. Aren't you? Shouldn't we be? I mean, there's 8 billion people on the earth. You won't be missed. You're not that important. I mean, that's almost a direct quote of what he said, just what I'm saying off the top of my head, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So I want you in the audience, if you haven't seen or heard this yet, I want you to witness this in real time. Because I think if you have a chance to see it for yourself, not just us play a clip here or there or read a quote here or there, but see how the entire argument is constructed here, how effective and devastating this is, it'll make the question I want to ask after the clip even more poignant. How does the same mind or group of minds, I mean, Maher's got a team of writers, it's not just all him, how does the same mind or group of minds in the span of 1 week say, fine with killing as many babies as you want, not my problem. So like the full Maki Desaad position, literally. And then a week later, you're like, man, that Maki Desaad stuff's really gross. How? Because I think this is an important conversation for us to have in terms of navigating the waters of persuasion that we need to win, all right? You know, the waters of persuasion in America's culture war right now are like what was going on in the outer rims of the Pacific Ocean in the early era of the Japanese theater of World War II. This is before you even start talking about we're going to take back the Philippines and Guam and contemplate whether to drop a bomb, a weapon of mass destruction to close things out on the Japanese mainland or not. You've got to get some leverage in the open seas. right? That's why Midway is often considered the turning point, battle of the Japanese theater. We need a Midway in the culture war. We have an initial bulwark, some initial stake in the ground where from this point forward now we're back on offense. You see what is that a good analogy, do you think?
Yeah.
And I think it's important, therefore, for us to get there that we understand the waters of persuasion that we are wading into. Because a lot of the people's minds we have to persuade are probably the people that are capable of these two positions simultaneously. But let's let Bill Maher articulate his position on the grooming of children himself right here.
And finally, new rule. As one of the few people in the public eye who's gone through life and never had kids, someone has to tell me, why am I always having to defend them? I don't even like kids. But I also think it's every adult's job to protect them. Have you all been watching the Max documentary called Quiet on Set, The Dark Side of Kids TV? OMG. Nickelodeon, it wasn't a studio, it was Neverland Ranch with Kraft Services. It is just scene after scene, clip after clip, of the child stars of their day being subjected to obviously inappropriate, highly sexualized degradation, and quite a few pickles going through glory holes. I was grossed out and I've gone camping with John Waters. I kid you, John, I love you. So I don't know if this documentary is the talk of your town, but it is out here because it didn't just expose a dangerous workplace, it also exposed hypocrisy. Because it must be pointed out that when the evil governor of Florida was saying the exact same thing about kids and creepy stuff at Disney that liberals now find intolerable at Nickelodeon, he was dismissed as a hick and a bigot. But why would a kid's content factory like Disney be all that different than the one at Nickelodeon? A 2014 CNN report discovered that at least 35 Disney employees had been arrested for sex crimes against children, and in 2021, Disney child star Alison Stoner confessed she only narrowly survived the toddler-to-train-wreck pipeline. The next year, child star Cole Sprouse told the New York Times that young actresses at the Disney Channel were heavily sexualized from an early age. You know, Willie Sutton said he robbed banks because that's where the money is. And the reason we find pedophiles in the Boy Scouts and the rectory in kids' TV is that's where the kids are. DeSantis wasn't wrong. But we're so tribal now, the left will overlook child if the guy from the wrong party calls it out. Sure, Nickelodeon messed up Amanda Bynes, but the Mickey Mouse Club was where Britney Spears got her start, and she's perfectly fine. And get this, after Brian Peck, who was one of the lead creeps at Nickelodeon, served 16 months in prison for the molesting he did there, Disney hired him. Naturally, to work on a children's series. Oh, for pedophiles in Hollywood, it's a small world after all. And not just Hollywood. There are Instagram moms these days who are practically only fansing their itty-bitty beauty queen daughters by having them wear skimpy bikinis and eat bananas to build social media stardom. They're called Sharenters, a hybrid of sharing and parent. I call them pimps, a hybrid of pimp and s. And people who believe in social justice have agreed this is wrong and this is bad, and exposing kids to an adult world of lurid costumes and garish makeup borders on abuse. Now, hurry up and get in the car. We're late for Drag Queen Story Hour. Not that there's anything wrong with being a drag queen, but maybe it's time to admit that sometimes Drag Queen Story Hour is more for the queen than the kids. Sure, kids love a clown, but does the clown have to have tits? And when I see a five-year-old tipping at a bar under a sign that says it's not going to lick itself, do I have to pretend that's cool in order to keep my liberal ID card? Sorry, I can't do that. If you want kids to be more tolerant, why not have handicapped people read them stories? Kids are more likely to encounter disabled people than drag queens in life. Geez, can't we just go back to the good old days when kids were read simple stories with simple morals like, if you're a lonely single man, just make a boy out of wood. I've said it before, wokeness is not an extension of liberalism anymore. It's more often taking something so far that it becomes the opposite. Teaching kids not to hate or judge those who are different, great. Proud we got there, all for that. But at a certain point, inclusion becomes promotion. And contrary to current progressive dogma, children aren't miniature adults wise beyond their years, they're morons. They're gullible morons who'll believe anything and just want to please grown-ups. And they don't have any frame of reference, so they normalize whatever's happening. That's why endlessly talking about gender to six-year-olds isn't just inappropriate. It's what the law would call entrapment, which means enticing people into doing something they wouldn't ordinarily do. For example, after 9/11, there were several cases of overzealous federal agents leading sad losers into terrorist plots, like the undercover FBI agent who got seven out-of-work dudes in Liberty City, Florida, to sign on to a plot to bomb the Sears Tower in Chicago. Oh, please, these guys didn't even have a gun. But when someone said, wouldn't it be cool if we taught the man a lesson and blew something up? They said, yeah, that would be kind of cool. Entrapment. Suggesting someone into something they wouldn't otherwise do. And if you think that some of that isn't going on with gender in schools, you're not watching enough TikTok videos.
I pledge allegiance to the queers.
I'm not allowed to be out as trans non-binary at school. So my response to this is to be as obnoxiously queer as possible.
There's a certain kind of activist these days who wants to take heterosexuality, old school, old fashioned, boring, minding its own business heterosexuality, and lump it in with patriarchy and sexism and racism and tell kids, wouldn't it be cool if you were anything but that? It also seems to be the theme of kind of a lot of kids' books these days. I never used the phrase gay agenda because I thought it was mostly nonsense. And it is, mostly. But a director for Disney Television Animation did say after she was hired,
the showrunners were super welcoming to, like, my, like, not at all secret gay agenda. Like, I was just, wherever I could, just basically adding queerness. No one would stop me and no one was trying to stop me.
Look, I'm all for adding queerness wherever. I put some in my drink before I came out here tonight. But maybe we should think about giving kids a break from our culture wars for a minute, or at least until the election is over.
All right, let's ponder that for a second, and then we'll discuss it further after I talk about our friends over at Fast Growing Trees. Pardon me, they've got the biggest online nursery right here in the U.S. with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants, over 2 million happy customers as well. They've got everything you could possibly want. They've got fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, house plants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for you, your climate, and your space. I mean, you can even grow lemon, avocado, olive, and fig trees inside your home. All right. So a huge, wide variety. They've got the best deals this spring online, up to half off on selected plants and other deals as well. And if you're one of our listeners or viewers here on the Steve Dace Show, you can get an additional 15% off your first purchase when you use the code DACE at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code DACE, fastgrowingtrees.com. And you'll also get their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee. They offer free plant consultation forever. Can't beat it. FastGrowingTrees.com. Use the code DACE at checkout for the discount. FastGrowingTrees.com. Discount code DACE. Okay. So that takedown was delivered by the same show, writers, and host that a week ago said they were fine with murder, even said they knew it was murder. In fact, went so far as to criticize pro-lifers who wanted to agree to some form of abortion restrictions, even went so far as to say they really only respected the abolitionist view because they agree. Bill Maher agrees it's murder. But he's okay if you do it. We had too many kids. You're not going to be missed. You're not that special. 8 billion people on Earth. Let's just all move on. So from the same mind and the same show that said that 1 week ago, Todd, said the 8 minute clip 1 week later that we just played on the program. How much of this is I went too far the other time and so I think I got to dial it back a little bit as a broadcaster because that happens at times. How much of it is an actual worldview? And if it is an actual worldview, explain that to us.
Oh, it is an actual worldview. It's not, he's not balancing the equation. That's not what he's doing. His worldview, honestly, in part, see, he reminds me, and his career is kind of like yours. The key when he talks about halfway through there, he said, we've become so tribal. Steve, many, many times you said on your show that I'm just not a joiner. And there's reasons for that. Bill Maher's never been a joiner either. Now, not being a joiner in no way gets you off the hook on being, you know, right or wrong on things. We clearly think he's wrong about things.
You can turn being a contrarian into an idol, too.
Absolutely. Yeah. But not being a joiner, if we sit down and really think about it, gets you out of a lot of what is, you know, middle school, high school, teenage nonsense that most adults these days never get out of. If there's a worldview, it's that. It's not being a joy. He's always, I remember back, I believe in college when I first came across Bill Maher and doing his stand. Bill Maher has not changed. He is not. Just like Steve Dace has not changed. Same. You look out at people who have changed. You see, oh my goodness, David French has changed. Joe and Mika. Joe, that guy definitely changed. You guys haven't.
Joe Scarborough was one of the original Contract with America right wingers.
Yes. Because they're joiners. They're tribal. They're trying to fit in. I think that's what's here. So I don't think there's anything really to be learned. For example, just a couple of weeks ago, I saw that somebody wanted to come on his show. I can't remember who it was. It was somebody semi-famous, so I think we would have heard of him. But as a condition for coming on Bill Maher's after, I think he does a show after the show. But Bill actually smokes pot the whole time while he's doing it. He just sits in a lounger and they have drinks and they talk casually. And the guy has apparently been clean for a fairly short period of time. So he asked Bill Maher if he could, during that episode, he could not do it. And Bill Maher just said no. He just said, it doesn't mean I hate you. It's my show. This is what we do here. I'm not going to resent you for not coming on. But that's Bill Maher. He just does not change. It does not mean you should like him or hate him. It doesn't mean he's right or he's wrong. But this part of him is kind of unicorny. If you go out into the world, left, right, center, south, the people who aren't joiners are rare. People so badly need to belong just to fit in, to be one. This is my, and the church is not the church these days, largely because the church so desperately just wants to fit in. Will you like me? Will you say nice things?
Wants to be relevant.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know. Bill, founding father wise, a lot of guys that had a lot of differences got to, you know who Bill, he kind of reminds me of, if this was the founding generation, he's kind of Ben Franklin. He likes, you know, Ben Franklin, like chicks, man, was with a lot of them. It was not about the sanctity of marriage, but believed a lot of really important things. Managed to ground men who kind of got way too high in the clouds sometimes, like Thomas Jefferson and John Adams, brought him back to earth, but not a perfect guy. I don't think this is really that complicated, but I don't think there's some cheat code. If we learn something about Bill Maher, we can find the secrets and how to. That's
see,
not
that,
going on here.
I'm glad. This is why I think this conversation was important, because what you're telling us is it's a makeup issue for Bill Maher. It's not a worldview issue. And so, therefore, there is no archetype of some worldview apologetic that we could come up with based on what's happened to him that would help us to reach more people like him. Because what you're telling us really is that ultimately Bill Maher isn't primarily driven, regardless of what his worldview is, he's not primarily driven by pleasing people and gaining their affirmation.
Right.
Okay. And unfortunately, that is a rare thing in our culture, regardless of worldview. That's a rare thing on the right. It's an extremely rare thing on the left. Okay. So because of that, then ultimately, there, from an apologetic standpoint, there's probably nothing that we could glean from that then. Because we're starting off with a guy who is willing to entertain things just based on what he independently thinks of what the larger group think happens to be. And that's just not a really large sample size in our culture today.
Not at all. Not at all. People think they're...
Particularly among the men, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, which is why I think he's capable of arguing points. Very rarely can you put somebody in something close to a silo. Bill Maher... he said that a week ago, but somehow, then how is that guy capable of writing?
That, we're still left with that question, right? We're still left with, how do you go from, as long as the kid has not fully emerged from the birth canal, you can dismember it, mutilate it, do whatever. I mean, open its head up with a mallet and suck the brains out with a vacuum, whatever you want to do to it.
Yeah.
Okay. But once the kid's out of the birth canal, then we all have a responsibility to not corrupt them, to cherish them, to take care of them. How do you make that worldview leap? Where does that come from? Well, because I would say in the case of most people that the reason why the polling is stronger for us on the tranny and the groomer stuff than the abortion stuff is because it's a relatively new challenge to our moral ethos. I mean, abortion is a sunk cost that goes back decades and people are kind of cemented in. This one is a new stimulus. This is a new thing and it's gone 0 to 60. You know, it's gone fast and furious here in a nanosecond. So the normal frog in the boiling water, we let things simmer and groom you to accept it, that we have typically seen from the spirit of the age. In this case, it's just gone full Monty like overnight, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, and so there's still enough residual imago Dei in the culture to be revulsed by that, even if you don't necessarily have a cogent argument to why that should never be allowed, but you just have an instinctive reaction to it, right? Mm-hmm. In his case, since we're both agreeing that he's not primarily driven by going with the crowd and affirmation anyway, so that wouldn't apply to him. So then explain the worldview that on one end says, until the kid comes out of the birth canal, do whatever you want to him. And the minute he does, we should, you know, protect their innocence. How do you think he makes those two parallels?
I don't think he does. I think he... the closest thing I think he would come to it is that the child is stupid right now.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a fully formed adult. So when we're talking about adults, I mean, he gives up that ghost in several ways. I mean, there's nothing really wrong with being a drag queen. I don't think there's any kind of gay agenda. He's talking about an adult world, like just everybody. Do what you want to. I mean, he really does. He still wants to. Just like he's the old school liberal, he wants to argue with you, Steve. You could come on his show. Ann Coulter was on his show 100 different times. He loves arguing with people. He's old school that way. He wants to win the argument. He likes him some him too. It's just ego. He's very ego-driven. He does not want to be part of a cult. What the woke is very cultish. They're not particularly selfish. Mm-hmm. They want to be part of this giant hole and throw themselves in it and totally lose themselves. Bill Maher wants no part of that. He wants you to see, I'm Bill Maher, I'm smart. Most of those people at Columbia University, even if they kind of say that about this, think themselves about this, then they show their fruits, mm-hmm. and their fruits are, I'm the mob, I love being the mob. What I really want is the comfort, the warm blanket of the mob. That's not Bill Maher. Now, I don't know, is that wiring? How'd you grow up? There's 100 different ways. The more, Steve, you tell people about your background, how you grow up, you could connect dots of why you are the way you are. So mm-hmm. I don't know that to Bill Maher, but I just don't think it's less worldview for him than he's just very ego driven. I don't think he even really tries to seamlessly tie a lot of different things
together.
Right,
because the worldview that he actually states in that clip is not possible.
He's a New Yorker. He's cosmopolitan. He's everybody throw it all in. I kind of like the chaos of the crossroads.
Yeah, I mean, this idea that we were ever going to let this level of licentiousness and depravity in, and then we were just going to build a moat around the kids and not infest them with it, just that's not reality. Mm-hmm. That's just not how human nature works. It's contrary to the facts on the ground. It's every bit as mythical as you don't assume my pronouns. Mm-hmm. Okay, that ultimately, If you're going to replace a moral framework with another one, the natural human instinct is to pass on your moral framework, regardless of what it is. And that's what this is. This is a passing on of that moral framework. We call it grooming because we view it as immoral. Mm-hmm. Okay. But if this is your moral framework, then, I mean, you are just passing on your tradition. You're passing on your legacy to the next generation. I mean, how do you know these kids don't enjoy this? How do you know that they're not born gay? How do you see? I mean, mm-hmm. that is if you view it as moral, that is how you're going to define this. So this middle ground arena where we just have San Francisco everywhere other than where beings 12 and under exist is just not reality. We're going to have church everywhere.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of what church we're going to have. We're going to have church everywhere, in every home, in every school, in every government building, on every show. We're going to have church on every single place we go. It's just a matter of which church we have in, but we're going to have church. More in a moment. If you are one of those homeowners trying to buy or sell a home, maybe do both at the same time, Godspeed. But you've probably discovered that's a major undertaking, even when we're not in unprecedented times.
Bing.
Thank you. Wanted to make sure you were still awake over there.
I'm awake.
But that's even more the case now that we are. All right. So dare not, my good sir or madam, venture forth into the Let's Go Brandon real estate market without an agent you can trust, and you will find them at realestateagentsitrust.com. Again, that's realestateagentsitrust.com. These are full-time agents, proven track records of success, people who really know the ins and outs of the market you want to get in or out of, all right? And you don't want to miss out on all that stress and anxiety about going it alone, finding out you have an agent you can't trust. Actually, yes, you do want to miss out. You want to miss out on those things. All right. So to miss out on those things, go to realestateagentsitrust.com. The name kind of says it all. That's realestateagentsitrust.com. All right. So we'll conclude here with Pop Culture Tuesday. And we have seen more and more, particularly in the seeker-sensitive megachurch era. And to me, by the way, I should say this. Megachurch to me isn't, we typically define it by the size of your membership. That doesn't tell me anything. Okay? I mean, If you look throughout history, Calvin had at times large ministries. Spurgeon, who's, you know, my lodestars, we're going through the Romans study at times, had some of the largest churches that London's ever seen. Okay, it's size, you know, God doesn't judge the way we do, what's on the outside. Megachurch to me is a mentality. Like, you could plant a church and it could have 100, 200, 300 people there. That's not technically a mega church, but if you're putting in the methodologies of mega churchness into that ministry, it's because you're trying to do what will grow a crowd, not necessarily what will draw people to a prophetic witness. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I got it.
So mega church to me is not denoted by the size of your congregation, but the methodology by which you accumulated that size and then tend to it. That's how I would define it. Fair?
Yeah.
And you can have your own definition, but it's a Steve Day show. So that's mine. And I just figured if you guys are going to tune in, then you should know what I mean when I say that. Okay. What we've seen a lot more of here in this mega church era is we have seen less of people leaving the church after Sunday and then spending the rest of their time influencing and inspiring the culture, particularly pop culture. I know, like, you know, for you young people, there was a time California was a red state. You and I are old enough to remember those times. There was a time that you and I are not old enough to remember, because it would be other centuries, where the church actually, it was what inspired and influenced the greatest writings, the greatest paintings, the greatest compositions of music, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, now what is happening is that we bring those influences into the church externally to inspire us. And that's not always a bad thing. You know, one of the things we do on this segment every week is talk about things going on in pop culture where they intersect with our value system. And then sometimes we'll ask ourselves, do they know what they're doing? Like, next week, we're going to talk about a show. The number one show on Netflix so far this year is Three Body Problem. And we're going to talk about that show next week. There will be some spoiler alerts, so you've been warned. And if you've seen any of this show, especially the MacGuffin of the show, you have to ask yourself, do these people know what they're saying? Okay? Do they understand what this means? Right? So that's not always a bad thing. But if the ratio is like 99%, we bring them in to influence us, and 1% we go out to influence them, that's never a good thing, right?
And that's pretty much what it is.
And that's pretty much only a slight exaggeration. Might on a good day be 95.5, all right? And so the problem also is that when you are bringing in so much of that outside pop culture to influence and inspire your people, then that sieve is gonna miss a lot of crap, right? A lot of stuff's going to get through, and maybe stuff that has no business being in the church, and or maybe stuff that's more than you bargained for when you brought it in, and then you're like, okay, what do I do? You know, do I just own it, or do I admit, hey, we blew that one? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That can happen, okay? And an example of at least one of those two things happening occurred about a week and a half ago, not too far from where we live, at James River Church in Missouri. And I'd never heard of this ministry. I'd never heard of this event, even though it's one of the largest men's events in the country now. And again, it's within driving distance of where we live. We're just a few hours away, and yet I'd never heard of it.
And until you want a really small world?
This event.
I was out for dinner this weekend with good friends Craig and Christy. They listen. They've lived here for 10 years now. We know them through soccer. Mm-hmm. This is their former church. Mm. They said his phone just absolutely blew up immediately after this happened with friends who are still there that just walked out after what they saw.
Well, my phone, my inbox has blown up as well. I mean, we have one of the largest audiences, of a Christian audience on a platform in America today, probably within this show. So I got a ton of feedback right away. I got emails and stuff from people who were at the event. I mean, I heard quite a bit. Except for, I have no idea why you'd ever bring a sword swallower in to do a church event. Like, I can't contemplate you know, Dirty Dancing for Jesus. Hey guys, come watch this man deep throat a sharp phallus, and bring your sons. I for the life of me, even if I didn't personally know one of the major parties involved, I have no idea how that made it through any editing process at all. None.
But it did.
Now, that's an example of the garbage that gets through when the road is wide. All right. And when we're bringing in more from pop culture than we are sending out. Okay. So other than saying I have no idea why that has any place in any ministry at all, and saying I thought it was right for Mark Driscoll to speak out against it, I said that on Twitter the night the story broke. I don't think I've said anything else about it publicly.
No, I agree. I don't remember.
And not on this show. And I want to explain to you why. And I think it might help you to understand questions you may have on other matters that I'm getting asked about a lot right now. One, I'm never in a hurry to be wrong. I hate to be wrong. I'm wrong because I'm human. Wrong more than I want to admit. But I'm never in a hurry to be wrong. I wanted to wait and hear more. Given how much, and I had heard from several friends that around the country, including my own pastor, about how much the pastor, John Lindell, of James River Church is respected, how much this is considered kind of a shining star within the Assemblies of God denomination. Okay, so I wanted to give them, outside of the obvious, we all see the video of a dude swallowing a large phallus in front of boys, that there's just no place for that to ever occur, right, in a church. Outside of that, there's many more details here, you know? I mean, does Mark Driscoll have a relationship with this pastor? Yeah, I mean, there's things just we don't know, and I didn't want to be in a hurry to be wrong. Number two, though I am aware he is a controversial figure, I've read all the stuff about the past. You guys send me stuff like I don't know. I do know. Sometimes I just come to a different conclusion than you. I personally know Mark Driscoll. And about a year ago at this time, the Lord used Mark Driscoll to get me out of the deepest pit I have ever been in my entire life. The closest I have ever come to letting go of the rope. And truly testing if which one of us is right, me or Todd, on once saved, always saved. I was this close, the closest I've ever been. And the Lord used Mark to slap me around and get me out of that pit. And for that, I will be eternally grateful. That doesn't mean, by the way, did I say Mark Driscoll has papal infallibility? Did I just say that?
No,
I didn't say that. Okay. And I hate having to draw these distinctions, but I just understand in the day and age that we live in, it just must be done. You cannot just assume people can, and in mass, are capable of nuance and seeing things just exactly as you saw them and not what you didn't say, right?
Yes.
So I'm not saying he's infallible. I'm not saying he's perfect. Something went wrong at Mars Hill Church in Seattle because it's not there anymore, right? And he's not there anymore. So clearly that didn't go the way everybody wanted it to go when they planted the church day one, right? Didn't end well. Now, why, who, and to what ratio everyone gets blame, and whether you want to hold him accountable for that and blame him for that forever, you can all have your own opinions on that, and I'm not here to argue with you about that. What I'm here to tell you is that I am eternally grateful that through knowing Mark, the Lord was able to get him to stop me from altering the course of really the rest of my life. I was in the deepest hole I'd ever been in, and I am forever appreciative to that. And it's because of that that I was very hesitant to wade in on this, because I am a human being, and so my natural inclination would be to do what? Take Mark's side. Because I don't know John Lindell, do I?
No.
I do know Mark Driscoll, though, do I?
Yes.
Okay. I'm also, just as a bias, extremely beyond suspicious to resentful of the lengths that the modern American church is willing to go to be relevant to the outer culture. So on top of my personal association with Mark Driscoll, this story in particular would fit right into my bias. And I could write,
sure.
I wouldn't have even had to ever met Mark Driscoll at all. okay, to have a story like this fit right into my bias and just absolutely unload on it, right? But then I've got to find out what I think is actually true. And I can tell you there's two reasons sometimes when, every time I should say, there's always one of these two reasons. When you see a great man or a good man who has stood for greatness much of his calling or life, and then suddenly make a decision or take a position that, if you're trying to be an adult and see it from their perspective, you're just like, I get your math. Like, I can get your math, but I still just disagree with your math. But I understand your math, okay? Mm-hmm. So we just disagree. In this case, I know, like on Ukraine last hour, I'm like, I don't even get Ben's math. I totally get Ben's math on being wrong on the jab. Wife's a doctor. He's a highly educated guy. Going to have a bias towards the... Yeah, I mean, I didn't agree with his math, but I could see the math of why he was late to see the jab for what it was. That would make sense to me. Ukraine, the math just doesn't make any sense. It makes no... There's no... The math, I think, is bad. It's not that I disagree with it. I think it's bad math. If you're wondering if there's a guy who's been really good and stood for great things for a long period of time, and you're like, all of a sudden, this guy, sorry, guys, I'm having problems with my IFB in this afternoon. This makes no sense. Or when someone you guys know that I'm associated with or have spoken fondly of in the past at times, when they take a position radically different than me, a bunch of you will ask me to respond or clarify. My position is my clarification. The other person's position is theirs. But as a general rule, when a man who has been on the narrow road more times than not suddenly departs from it, there's two reasons why. He's personally compromised in his private life. Or there's a relationship at stake that has compromised him. And I didn't want to let my relationship with Driscoll compromise my take on this. And so that's why, if you're like, man, why is this person defending this person for this long who's indefensible? Do some research. You'll probably find out that they have a long-standing relationship. And relationships can blind us, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So I didn't want to let that be what happened to me in this case. But the more that we are learning about this, this sword swallower put out his own video on Instagram. I watched the entire thing. He says, I'm not a stripper. I'm a go-go dancer. He claims he's a Christian and then provides no evidence that he is, and that he likes to go worship with Buddhists. I mean, it's a very troubling statement. The best you can say, by the way, this guy's internet, and you and I did some research and took a look at some of this stuff together.
Yeah.
Because I wanted a second opinion on this. I mean, you know, right now there's this argument about whether this former OnlyFans model has truly converted to Catholicism or not, right? And have you seen this? And she did an interview with Michael Knowles. Have you heard about this?
Oh, yes.
And so one of the things people have pointed out, though, is, hey, she's like tried to scrub her porn career from her social media. She's not, you know, selling. Well, if you go look at this sword swallower guy's social media, you and I went and looked. This stuff is all there.
Yeah.
I mean, all the stuff he was doing with, you know, gay, where he was kind of on the periphery of gay porn and some of this other stuff, this stuff's all on his social media still. So it wasn't some effort to say, hey, I'm not that person anymore. Let me get rid of all that stuff. Okay. The best you can say about this story, the best you can say is that Pastor John Lindell platformed somebody that is a sincere spiritual seeker, but has, did I say he was a Christian?
No.
No. Did I say he was a Christian leader?
No.
Did I say he had any form of disciple-making calling that had been demonstrated yet?
No.
I said he was a sincere spiritual seeker who needed to be sitting on the other side of the room in the stands. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
It should not have been platformed at all. Never should have happened. And
it's so judgy, Steve.
And honestly, the I think it is interesting you've heard Driscoll say nothing since this event. And if you know anything about Mark, he ain't short on opinions. So he said nothing. John Lindell can't stop talking about it. And the one thing I haven't heard him say yet is that person should have never been doing those acts in front of a Christian audience, particularly young males. This isn't 87, guys. It is just as likely that your young boy is being subjected to gay porn as it is Daddy's Hustler and Playboy collection of yesteryear. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. To be putting other attractive men where they're performing deep throat acts with phalluses in church, half naked in front of boys, just should not happen. Period. End of sentence. Know what time it is. And at some point, John Lindell just needs to say that. Stop talking about Driscoll or what's divisive. Just needs to say, guys, you know what? We blew that one.
He doubled down again, just like Alistair Begg
did. I know.
Just like it.
I know. Just flat out, we shouldn't have had a half-naked young adult male deep-throating a phallus in front of young men. And in front of boys, we just shouldn't have done that. That was nuts, crazy. I'm sorry. Just say it.
If that's a hard thing to do for a pastor, yikes.
We're in trouble. Romans 8:28.